Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. By just about every measure, American millennials are less religious than their predecessors, so you'd think they might be less likely to support positions favored by the religious right. That's certainly the case when it comes to gay marriage, but not abortion. Ruth Graham is a regular contributor to Slate, where her article, The New Culture of Life, argues that a growing number of young pro-life activists are, or call themselves, secular. Ruth, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Great to be here.
So where do millennials stand on abortion compared to other issues that are largely in the realm of the religious right?
Yeah, it's really interesting because we're used to seeing every generation get more progressive on things like sexuality and drug law and things like that. But millennials, they fit pretty comfortably into the rest of the population. So 52% of them say the label pro-life applies to them. They're actually more conservative when it comes to things like favoring bans on late-term abortion. Pro-life millennial activists like to call themselves the pro-life generation. And, you know, when you ask people questions about abortion in different ways, you get a lot of different answers. So that probably is too simplistic, but they're certainly not definitively getting more progressive than the generations that came before them.
So calling themselves pro-life, but you spoke to the leaders of several different groups that are distancing themselves from the traditional pro-life movement. What did you find?
Yeah, exactly. So traditionally, as you said, the pro-life movement has been allied closely with the Republican Party and specifically with the religious right. So they found themselves working with people who also cared about things like sexuality, prayer in public schools, the kinds of issues that happen to be important to conservative, you know, late 20th century American Christians. This newer generation of activists, at least the ones that I spoke to, were sort of saying, listen, those issues really have nothing, no inherent connection to abortion. And they see abortion, they call it a life issue, and they see it as more connected to things like, you know, unjust war, euthanasia, the death penalty, all these issues that have some connection to the idea of inherent, you know, an inherent value to all human life. And you can trace that idea back to Catholicism pretty easily. There's an idea of the seamless garment of life that was first articulated in the 1980s. But not all of these activists are Catholic or are even religious at all. That was another really interesting strain, is that a lot of them are, you know, hoping to sort of sever the idea that caring about abortion is only for conservative Christians.
So they don't want to be seen as religious or conservative Christian.
Yeah, exactly. So there's an organization, Secular Pro-Life, that is explicitly about this and is trying to sort of make space for pro-life activists to find each other and operate outside of church spaces and religious spaces and, you know, really making secular sort of human rights-based arguments about abortion.
So it is a more nuanced view, certainly, than the traditional pro-life view. But I'm wrestling with this question about being thought of as religious, because isn't it echoing a religious or fundamentally religious or theological view that life begins at conception? I mean, that's not a secular view that, you know, a scientist would say a 2-month-old fetus is not a sustainable life, right? Is it more strategic not to be seen as religious?
I think the question of when life begins is fundamentally a religious or a philosophical question for anyone. So, you know, is a fetus in the womb life? That depends on what you mean by life. You know, does it necessarily mean sustainable on its own, or does it mean something that is growing towards sustainability? You know, is an acorn life or is only an oak tree life? So these are fundamentally philosophical questions that have been, you know, maybe wrestled with more in religious spaces. But I think when it comes down to it, you know, it is a philosophical question, no matter what your belief is.
They also don't want to be associated with the GOP necessarily. Are they voting for Trump? Did you hear that from?
You know, it was so interesting because, I started with that question sort of front of mind. And that's what I wanted to figure out first is what are pro-life voters doing when the Republican nominee is someone who has really not made a convincing case that abortion is an important issue to him at all. So he has sort of, you know, he's parroted some sort of lines from the pro-life movement, but he's really been incoherent on it over the course of his career and even very recently. So that was one of the most interesting questions to me. And it took me weeks of reporting to even find a pro-life voter, or, you know, a young pro-life voter who would talk to me about voting for Trump. And it was, you know, over time they sort of trickled in, and I did speak to a few people who had, I would say, kind of talked themselves into it by saying, well, you know, at least there's a chance he'll affect the Supreme Court. You know, at least he's knows he has to pander to us, basically. But there's really, really not a lot of enthusiasm for Donald Trump among this group.
So issues like the death penalty that you mentioned for secular pro-life, poverty issues, important, but are they spending time and resources on fighting that, or is abortion really the central cause?
Yeah, I would say abortion is the central cause, but that may not be totally fair because I was seeking out abortion activists. But I do think it's relevant to sort of look at what other political issues they see as connected to that cause, because it may say something about where other young people who are not activists but who think of themselves as pro-life, it may say something about what they value when they go into the voting booth.
Another distinction here, more women. I mean, in the traditional pro-life movement, there are not. It's, you know, has been criticized as a male movement, certainly. You spoke with a woman, the founder of New Wave Feminist, Destiny Herndon De La Rosa. This is not what we think of traditionally as feminism. You know, similar to a lot of conservatives have become single-issue voters on abortion, so have feminism for abortion rights.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see those lines scrambled, because I think this concept would be so foreign and even offensive to activists on both sides of this issue, you know, when you think back about sort of the 1980s abortion wars. So the idea that there would be self-described feminists being strong pro-life activists is really fascinating. And Destiny was saying, and I hope I'm not mangling her argument here, but a lot of the big feminist fights of the 60s, 70s, even 80s about women at work and things like that have been, you know, not won. I don't want to say that those issues are dead, but she's saying there's this whole new, category of, you know, basically patriarchal oppression when it comes to, you know, men wanting their girlfriends or wives to be on chemical birth control for decades, you know, encouraging them to get abortions if they don't want to, discouraging them to have children. And again, I'm characterizing her argument, not my own. But this idea that, you know, the pressure on women to kind of control their fertility in that way, she sees as an inherently a feminist cause.
We're speaking with Ruth Graham. She's a regular contributor to Slate, where she wrote about the new culture of life, a shift in millennial opinion or packaging of the pro-life movement. Well, Ruth, you cited this Public Religion Research Institute survey, right? And we dug into that just a little bit, as well as a Pew poll which found millennials to be pro-choice to the tune of 60%. I think a lot depends on what kind of questions you ask, you know, whether people find abortion morally acceptable, for example. Many don't. But that doesn't mean they're against abortion rights. So let's get a sense of what they're looking for, these groups, these young millennials, in terms of policy around abortion. Did you get a sense of that?
A little bit. And I certainly think if you asked these activists to write down the policies that they were in favor of, it would look pretty much like the traditional pro-life movement. So most of them support, the various state laws that have been cropping up recently to, restrict access to and, the ability of abortion clinics to operate. That's not that surprising, although I did speak to one college activist who was sort of lamenting the rhetoric around forcing Planned Parenthood clinics to close down because Planned Parenthood does so much more for women's health. And that's another arm of the feminist argument, is sort of, we need to be there for women, not just for fetuses. So there's a little bit of a nod, at least rhetorically, to some of those policies being problematic. But honestly, I don't think there's a big break there.
In fact, that's something that another writer, Amanda Marcotte of Salon, wrote in response to your piece, that some of the women that you spoke with on the record saying the sorts of things we're familiar with hearing from more traditional pro-life groups. They look different, she says, but they're not really different from their predecessors. What did you get a sense that this is just, the old movement's new packaging?
I think it depends on how you look at it. So certainly from a political perspective, these are women that are still arguing for anti-abortion policies and for, you know, an anti-abortion culture. So if that's your priority, then this is not a huge shift. This isn't you know, pro-life women who dress like pro-choice women and are actually pro-choice. They really are pro-life, so they really sincerely oppose abortion. I asked one of the women, you know, ultimately, when it comes to it, would you force women to give birth who don't want to be pregnant? And she didn't have a great answer to that. And I think there is something, you know, when you kind of follow those ideas to their natural conclusion, there isn't a big difference to, you know, between this movement and the traditional movement. That said, I think the packaging is significantly different. I think the other issues that they see as connected to abortion, I think that's really significant. And I think that that could have really big implications for both the Republican and Democratic parties going forward. Because if you have this whole cohort of young people who care deeply about abortion but don't see themselves as naturally fitting into, you know, every item on the Republican platform going forward, you know, in a few decades, is that going to force a sort of realignment or at least encourage it?
So adopting the language of feminism, not really changing root policies, which brings up, how do traditional feminists think of this? And how do traditional pro-life groups think of this new kind of secular skin?
So I think traditional feminists are pretty appalled by this. So, you know, Amanda Marcotte, that piece in Salon responding to this, you know, I think that that's pretty representative of saying, you know, wait, this is, you know, this is just wolves in sheep's clothing. And, you know, I think there's even a pretty widespread view that you can't be a feminist if you're pro-life, or if you're anti-abortion, I should say. And then I think traditional pro-life activists are pretty welcoming toward this. I think it's exciting, first of all, to see, you know, this idea of the pro-life generation. It's exciting to see that young people are sort of making the movement their own. And I'm sure there's disagreement over some of these related policy issues. Certainly some leaders on the religious right, for example, a lot of the older religious right leaders have endorsed Trump, and a lot of these younger people are speaking out against him. So there's dissent and disagreement there. But at least, you know, the reaction I got to this piece, a lot of pro-life activists seem really excited about this.
Do you think by trying to reframe the issue, there's going to be a real effect on public opinion?
You know, that's interesting, because what some of these women told me is like, listen, we care deeply about policy, but what we really need to do is change the culture and make abortion sort of unthinkable. And if you do that, you don't need to change policy. Now, I find that far-fetched that that's actually going to happen, but it's a really interesting concept. One of them brought up an old Supreme Court case, I want to say from the 1920s, that basically allowed for state-enforced sterilization of, quote-unquote, the unfit. And that ruling was never formally overturned, but it became so morally repugnant, so obviously just against contemporary ethics and morals, that it would never happen today. And she was saying, listen, you know, if we change the culture, then we don't need to overturn Roe v. Wade, and we can sort of, you know, go about it from the cultural standpoint.
Ruth Graham, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
Ruth Graham, a regular contributor to Slate, where you'll find her article, The New Culture of Life. There's a link to read it at wordofmouthradio.org.